Good evening, everybody. It's The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. What a game. 9 in a row. The Blackhawks are on fire right now. And it couldn't have happened to a better squad. Coach Q becoming the second all-time coach in wins in the NHL. Unbelievable. I tried to listen to some of the game, Pete. As you know, my New Year's resolution here is to become a more diehard regular season Blackhawks fan. And they're making it easy, right? That's the beauty of a nine. Like, right when I said, you know what, I'm really going to get into this team, they rattle off.
Yeah.
It's Golden
State. Good luck charm.
It's Golden State Warrior type stuff here. You know what I mean? Like, this is like this team, just at Christmas time, you're like, well, they're really never going to catch Dallas. And they're right there. They're percentage points behind.
Pretty amazing.
It's amazing. It's amazing to me that
hockey.
Right. Starting the show talking hockey. It's amazing to me of like how they live up to the hype. And I think that when you think about sports in Chicago, that's really what it's about. I mean, whether you're a superstar quarterback or point guard, you know, there's something about winning and then having to repeat and do it. But what we're watching right now with the Chicago Blackhawks is Michael Jordan like.
Yeah.
Right.
Wayne Gretzky said that this era of the Hawks rivals, he said, is better than those 80s teams, the Oilers and the Islanders that dominated. He said better, this Hawks stretch.
And it's, I mean, and weren't we told, I mean, we were fed this story, and maybe that's just the way it is from the media, but we were fed in the offseason that, hey, they're going to have to break up the team. They don't have the players anymore because, you know, the salary cap of the way it is, and we had to get rid of Sharpie, and others were traded, and there were all these big trades. And here they are. It took them a month or so to figure out, all right, here's how it's going to work. And it's the same stars, Corey Crawford. I mean, this guy's it's amazing. He's not on the All-Star team, huh?
No. Got snubbed. It's hard, too, because with the hockey especially, that, you know, once you get to the playoffs, it's a whole new season, and the team that has, you know, the most points could lose in that first round. It seems like that happens a lot
all
in
the
hockey.
Time. Hockey seems to be what baseball's like that too. I feel like baseball, a lot of times, you're like, oh, that team just played 162 games and they won 100 of them and they're out in the first 5-game series. Hockey's like that too. Basketball, you never really see the number one seed get trounced in the first round.
Yeah,
you know, they'll come out and the talent level is different, but you're right, in hockey it seems like it happens all at the 8 seed goes all the way.
So yeah, it's like a matchup thing, you know. You never know, like, if you get matched up with somebody that you plays you tough, the whole new season.
Well, there's more to talk about tonight on the show. Coming up, we've got a guest tonight. We're very excited. We're going to preview the Tomorrow Never Knows Festival at Lincoln Hall and the Hideout. She was in Lincoln Hall, put it on every year. It's sort of the best in indie rock here in the country. And tonight we're going to talk with Torres, singer-songwriter, who is playing tomorrow night. She had an amazing year 2015, and she hopes to follow it up. She released her second album. She's played all over the place. I mean, she opened for Slater Kinney. We had Carrie Brownstein on not too long ago. I mean, she's blowing up, and she's going to join us to talk about her show tomorrow night at the Lincoln Hall. But first, here are today's top stories. A new police shooting video was released today after the city spent years trying to keep it from the public. When I first read it, I was like, I just accidentally hit the wrong file, and I've got the same story from 2 months ago here. This one's not as bad. I mean, I guess bad's not they're all bad. But this is a video of an unarmed teen that's running away in a traffic stop, and as he's running away, the police shoot. He's shot. Hours later, he dies. The police contend, and there's a lot that goes in there about the police contend that they thought he had a gun. He was armed.
Mm-hmm.
They end up later saying it was a phone box or a phone case. So, you know, that doesn't seem to be the story here. And I know that before you throw things at the radio, it's not really about police misconduct or the death, because that'll be worked out, and it should be worked out, and it should be worked out. And Anita Alvarez already passed on this case 2 years ago. I mean, it's really about, lawsuits at this point. But it's really, to me, much more about transparency and Mayor Emanuel once again, because this video was held by protective court order for 2 years. and it was held because the city continually asked for extensions and continually lobbied the judge what's the right word? I don't think lobby is the right word. But, you know, went to the judge and said, we don't want this released. They were still doing this when Mayor Emanuel was speaking to us about how he was sorry about the Laquan McDonald video and that he is going to be the mayor of transparency from this day forward.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do not.
Maybe that 2013 is grandfathered. It just that doesn't count. Anything that new shooting.
Any
a new
starting
shooting.
Now. Starting now. That's what his press conference is going to be tomorrow. Starting now. and then you hear the city's law department and they say it's just a standard operating procedure to ask for protective orders. That's in the story. So it doesn't matter even what the case is. They just go to the judge and be like, we want it sealed. We don't want this out to the public. And I'm sure they have their reasons, and I'm sure it has a lot to do with lawyers and evidence and things of that nature. But just let that soak in a little bit. When we're talking about changing the culture and what's happening here, the city's law department, as a standard operating procedure, asks for a protective order before you even know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what we're getting at as a society trying to find out more about these videos and why they happen. And again, this is not, to me, a story of police misconduct. And this is a story that is already because of what happened with the Laquan McDonald shooting. When you see that video, you recognize right away that something is afoul. When you see this video, what you see more than anything is, you know, probably what happens a lot on the streets of Chicago in a bang-bang type situation where a kid was running from police and police made a choice that, you know, whether or not they thought he had a gun, that's where, you know, the truth is.
This video certainly doesn't seem as damning as that Laquan McDonald one.
But at the same time, a kid is running away. It's a kid. It's a Chicagoan, and it's a 17-year-old kid, and you got to feel for everybody involved in the case, the police officers, the family, the victims, everybody involved. But what I still can't wrap my head around is, and even the judge says it in the piece today, the judge said he's troubled at how far the city goes to try and cover this stuff up. And it's the same thing. Don't right away. Here we are again, where the city's going to act as if, you know what, in an effort of transparency, because we love you, Chicago, and we want you to see this, we've decided to release it. I mean, the judge told us we had to. But we've decided to do it before the judge gave us the date. We decided to. Come on. It
smells.
312-981-7200. You know, this is a big story in Chicago. It's on the front page of ABC News, on the front page of the national papers, who really have, you know, I mean, they really want to, when police, Chicago police and video come out all in one sentence, they seem to have a lot of interest. And I'm sure you've seen the New York Times and the New Yorker talking about Mayor Emanuel. So this continues to be an issue for the city of Chicago, and this cannot be good for the mayor. When we come back, we'll talk more, not just about this story, but hey, we got great stories tonight. We'll talk about the GOP debate. We'll talk about some startup media in Chicago going away. We'll talk about the death of Lois Weisberg. And, of course, the Hawks, the Bulls, 53 from Jimmy Butler, and possible quarterback coming to Chicago. We'll talk more about that on the download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you quickly till 11 o'clock. It's truncated. You know, with Blackhawks play tonight, they got the big win over the Canadiens. They play again tomorrow night against Toronto. So we'll do the same tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, very, very excited. My guest tomorrow night will be legendary house DJ David Morales. David Morales is one of the first superstar DJs of our time. He actually he's credited as being one of the first that brought pop music, you know, like Whitney Houston, Madonna, and Mariah Carey, into the clubs. Like, he'd remix them. And it wasn't, he would just put, you know, a new beat behind, Express Yourself. the artists were recutting. It's the first time ever. They were redoing the lyrics. They'd go back in studio and do the lyrics over his beats. And that's something that David Morales brought to us. And we'll talk with him about his career and the show coming up to honor Frankie Knuckles this weekend at the Metro. Continuing tonight's carryout. Carryout's a little bit different. It's a little live. You know, we still read the newspaper, so you didn't have to tonight. Arts and culture news. Cows on Parade. Gallery 37, After School Matters, the Chicago Cultural Center. Just a few of the programs and ideas created by the late Director of Cultural Affairs, Lois Weisberg, who died at the age of 90. Great obit by Rick Kogan today in the Chicago Tribune. Mm-hmm. That is an amazing write-up. He's such a great writer. He probably doesn't like it, but, I mean, he is Chicago's obit writer.
Yeah.
The life that woman led here in Chicago and how
incredible.
Important she was to – she was the woman who started Friends at the Park. She brought so many different things. She was Harold Washington's director of special events, and she moved to become the director of cultural affairs for Mayor Daley. An amazing, amazing career, and she's described in Malcolm Gladwell's piece in The New Yorker, which was the precursor to Tipping Point, as a connector. Because that was really what she was great at. She was great at being a person who's like, you need to meet this person, and I have this relationship with this person, and we're going to come together, and we're going to solve problems. And that's something that, you know, that's what you want out of people who serve in your government, people who have that kind of ability to bring people together. Now, I've heard so much great stuff about Lois Weisberg, and she deserves every single nugget of it that you hear. But she's also the person that's ultimately responsible for the Millie. I don't know if you remember this, but in 2000, to celebrate the millennium, the Department of Cultural Affairs did a project called the Millie, mm-hmm. which was a dance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was. I had a copy of it for a long time. I did. It was like a party favor. You get late and you feel like no one's having a good time. You're like, you guys want to hear something? You want to see something? Rock, John Hancock. And it would be like a dance. It was like the Macarena. Remember, it's like yeah. that's what they were trying to do because that's, you know, that was hip. It's 2000.
You know, 90. You know, you have to have a couple of clunkers.
Hit the ball, Sammy Sosa style. That's in the song. Yeah. There's a thing. It's like rock, John Hancock. Hit the ball, Sammy Sosa style. It's like. We got to find it. We should look it up. Anyone who knows the rap by heart should call in right now. 312-981-7200. Everybody do the Millie. That was also a great career for Lois Weisberg, and she will definitely be missed.
Saw that her son.
Yeah, Jacob Weisberg. I knew that. He's the editor-in-chief at Slate.
A different son.
Oh,
Joseph.
Oh, I got
is
Jacob.
The... executive producer and creator of The Americans on FX.
Wow.
Show that I'm
talented company.
Watching. Yeah, how about it?
There you go. Yeah. The Fox Business Network debate was tonight in South Carolina, although it seemed to be mostly about ISIS and Donald Trump, so I don't know where the business part was.
Hey, I saw, you know, you were watching that back in the office there, and it was like you were watching a sitcom.
It was. Like a lot of laughs.
Every time I look over, I see you laughing at
it. Well, it's mostly had to do with Donald Trump, obviously, because it would inevitably what would happen is that every one of the candidates would defer their time to talk about how Donald Trump was wrong. Right. So they'd ask him a question and say, well, what my opponent here doesn't understand is that you have to let Muslims in. And you're like, they didn't really ask you that. You know, like you're just going. And Jeb Bush I heard him once in the 30 minutes that I watched talk. He didn't talk at all. But he had a good point just about sort of, you know, strength and weakness. That's a big thing in the Republican Party when it comes to being president. Like, what do you send a message to the world? And it's interesting. He thought that Donald Trump was showing weakness by doing the sort of no Muslims in the country kind of thing. Mm-hmm. He was showing the rest of the world was laughing or was not trusting. Because Muslim countries are going to be the countries that are our allies in a fight against ISIS. So how can you side with the Kurds or, you know, countries like Turkey who, if your president says, we don't want you in our country, mm-hmm. that's just not going to work. And, you know, Trump, I didn't say that. The New York Times, they get things wrong. They always get things wrong. It's like, oh, God. It's just so, I mean, we talked about it on the air Tuesday, Wednesday. It was like the State of the Union. It was so great to watch President Obama. He's so eloquent in his speech. And then you go watch Donald Trump. I just have a problem. All the ideology aside, you know, because I actually, you know, wanted to ask Rob this too. I thought, you know, I'm interested in Jeb Bush. I'm more interested in Marco Rubio. I think that Marco Rubio is a quiet but very thoughtful presence in the GOP right now. Right now, it's early on, so there's a lot of bombastic kind of, you know, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I think most of the I'm speaking from just what I see. I think most people in the GOP that, you know, kind of are, you know, I'm not, you know, radical either way, mm-hmm. you know, don't like Trump. They want to see somebody electable, maybe somebody a little bit more middle, like a Rand Paul even.
Yeah,
you know,
right. That's what Chris Roebling was big into, Rand Paul. But I've heard a lot of different people say from the start that Marco Rubio was a guy to watch.
Well, if the impetus here is to beat the presumptive Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton, which right now, if you look at the polls, especially Iowa, I mean, she's running neck and neck with Bernie. But if the whole goal here is just to beat Hillary Clinton, and it's interesting, Justin, that you brought up Senator Rubio, in national polls, and a lot of them, they seem to suggest that Rubio and Clinton are neck and neck. And in some polls, they have him with a slight lead over Hillary.
And I would assume that Trump-Hillary, it goes Hillary. I think that people would say, I don't know, I have no idea. Trump is so weird in polls because I just feel like it's such a name that people are like, I vote for him. I don't know. What the poll would be for Hillary Trump?
I don't off the top of my head, but you know what I'll do is after this update, I'll go to Real Clear Politics because they really do a good job of getting all of the polls together and then they average them out.
Do they even declare winners anymore? I was just watching CNN and Fox and it's just, you know, candidates battle. That's the scroll. Candidates duke it out.
I think they leave that to the various pundits on whichever you might be watching. Well, yeah, but
pundits.
I didn't really, you know, I was kind of in between the Hawks game and plus
Esmeralda was watching.
Unfortunately, I don't get Fox Business up here, so I wasn't able to see the whole thing like I normally do.
I think we should reset. I think we should act like we watched the whole thing and we're the ones who are going to
proclaim a winner.
Winners.
Yeah.
I think that should be I mean, I watched 20 minutes of it. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. 20 minutes I watched, 18 minutes Donald Trump was talking.
Right.
He just continued like, that's wrong. And he just cuts in and then it's another 10 minutes. And they have this really annoying thing where there was like a bell to like tell you that your time was up. Ding, ding. And nobody followed the rules. Nobody.
Who was the moderator?
It was, you know who it was? It was
was it Neil Cavuto?
It was Neil Cavuto. Yeah. Maria Bartiromo.
Yeah, Bartiromo, who I didn't know was at Fox. I mean, I always knew her as a CNBC person, but like, who knows, they bounce around. But I thought, you know, being a Fox Business debate, that it would be mostly about sort of how do you develop business interest, more about the economy. And what I saw, at least what I saw in the half hour that I saw, was mostly just about ISIS, immigration, ISIS, Obama, ISIS, Muslims, Obama.
There was a great exchange between Trump and Cruz when Trump said Cruz shouldn't be elected president because he was born in Canada.
Right.
And that sparked about a 5-minute back and forth.
Right. I mean, I yet to see them have an interesting or at least robust conversation about the issue of our economy. And that's what I'd like to see out of these guys as opposed to all this mudslinging they do left and right. But you know what? For the record, I thought Marco Rubio had good things to say tonight. And I've had some people that I respect from the get-go a year ago saying Marco Rubio is the guy to watch. So, you know, I don't know how he's going to play out. Here come the caucuses. Here come the primaries. But he seems to be the more sensible approach to a moderate GOP, even though he's a conservative. Was he a senator? Yeah, senator from Florida. I like his name, President Rubio. That'd be good. Hey, Rubio. Hey, Ricky Rubio. He's a point guard for the Timberwolves.
That's right.
There you go. They could be the same family. All right, we come back. We'll talk sports here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN. A little truncated episode before 11 o'clock when Patty Vasquez takes over. We're reading off the stories of the day. So some really good stuff, actually. I want to talk about Touch Vision, which shut down today, Touch Vision TV. And you know what? We're going to get them on, and we'll talk about that, so we can talk about that on Monday. But a big loss for the city of Chicago. The Oscar nominations, all white. That's crazy, man. I don't know. I feel like it's the second year in a row now where they have pretty much shut out people of color. I mean, I think African American specifically.
Yeah, in the main categories, not one.
I don't get it. I don't know.
Michael P. Jordan for Creed.
That's tough, man. I don't understand that. They every year it seems like in at least the last decade they've been moving towards making, like, really working towards having that be a part of it. Even in some cases where you're like, really? That movie? But you're like, okay, well, at least they're thinking about it. And now, like, in the 2 years, they're like, you know what, we're not thinking about it. I don't know. I just find it kind of... And for anyone who's like, well, you know, hey, race shouldn't play a factor in Hollywood or in the movies. But that's, you know, it's all subjective. You're counting on people who are in the nominating process to be on the up and up.
Right.
When you have guys like Michael, B. Jordan, who could be nominated for an Academy Award, or the movie Creed could be nominated, to snub that movie and it just happens to be a black director, you know, a black actor. It's just, and he gave the, and then you gave the supporting act to Sylvester Stallone, the white guy in the movie. You know what I mean? Straight Outta Compton is another one where you're like, okay, none of the actors, not the movie itself, none of that stuff was nominated. What was nominated was the screenplay, which was written by white dudes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm, and it's like, you count on the people who are making those decisions to be on the up and up. They better be on the up and up.
Well, I mean, I think the people that are making the decisions are old and white.
Yeah, right. They don't think about it.
So they're going to see Bridge Bridge of Spies.
Go to see Bridge of Spies.
That's a dad movie.
There are no dad movies in here. We need more dad movies. Well, that's terrible. In sports, of course, the Hawks win 9 in a row. Big ups to Coach Q for becoming the second most winner, I guess you'd say, in NHL history. As a coach, that's amazing. The Bulls today, as you just heard Rob Martire, 53 points. What's not told in that story, D. Rose did not play. And, more importantly, the Bulls were 20-plus down in the second quarter. Twitter was exploding. I was so mad. I saw a bunch of people. My friend Chris was like, bring back Tibbs. And it was just like, you know, and there was even questions if Butler was going to play because he has an ankle injury. And they're like, well, maybe Butler and Rose are going to sit tonight. And they started so poorly. Like, they were 20, they were 18, maybe 18 or 20 down at half. They came roaring back on Jimmy Butler again, and they win in overtime just to not be embarrassed. So anyone who says this stops the losing streak or it's the NBA, it is the Sixers. And you had to go to OT after going down 20 to beat these guys. So something's not right there, but you know what? That just seems to be the MO of this team. Whoop! And the down,
yep.
And up,
gonna
and
be like
the
that
down
all season.
And the thing that's terrible about it is you have to be dominant and consistent to win an NBA championship, obviously. But it's set up. You have to win four out of seven, three times. This team has proven they're going to win four and lose four. So that's not good going into an NBA playoffs for the Bulls. Ryan Sandberg's back in a Cubs jersey.
How about that?
That's great. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that tomorrow night. And the Bears send Kyle Long to his third Pro Bowl, and ESPN had a great story today about the services of RG3. He's the Redskins quarterback who's going to be a free agent, or at least traded. I don't know what his contract situation. And the Bears, ESPN says the Bears would be interested. There you go. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to Tomorrow Never Knows Festival with Torres here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Shubas and Lincoln Hall, with help from The Hideout, will host the Tomorrow Never Knows Music Festival. It's a series of shows featuring some of the best up-and-coming indie rock bands on the scene today. It's a January tradition in Chicago, and past bands have included Bon Iver, Wild Bell, and Neon Indian. This year, the lineup's stacked with big names, including Lou Barlow, Bully, The Go Team, and my guest tonight, Torres.
Lay off me, would you? I'm just trying to take this new skin for a spin. Pray for me, would you? I'm just nervous about my family filing in. Ready to wrap me up. Ready to love me in this new skin I'm news that tries to speak for me. What is it that they claim to be? A child of God, much like yourself. You will find me right where I fell. I am a tired woman. In January, I will just be 23.
Tora, also known as Mackenzie Scott, is a singer, songwriter, guitarist, who's had a tremendous 2015 and is looking for bigger things in 2016. Her second album, Sprinter, was released this past summer, and she just finished up a tour opening for Garbage, and around the holidays, opened up for Slater Kinney as well. She's currently headlining a winter tour that brings her to Chicago. Torres, welcome to The Download.
Hi, thank you.
How often do you get through to Chicago?
I think I make it to Chicago two or three times a year.
Yeah? Do you like playing here? What do you think of the audiences here?
Chicago audiences are the best. They're consistently, apart from New York, the best audiences that I have. I don't know what it is. They're very enthusiastic. I've never had a bad time in Chicago.
That's good. Well, what a year for you. I mean, you had a new record, a huge tour. You made all the year-end lists, the best stuff of 2015. When you have such a great year like that, do you feel pressure for the next year? Do you feel like you have to do better in 2016?
I don't feel pressure from any of those outlets or any of the... I'll say I don't feel any critical pressure. It's all personal pressure. I just have high standards for myself, so I set them and, you know, I plan accordingly to beat my own expectations.
Do you look at your career like that, where it's year to year, where, like, do you have that sort of moment, like we all do, reflective about what we did in 2015 and what we did in 2016? Are you making long-term goals for 2016?
Oh, absolutely. I do, I do that like everybody else does. I reflect and I actually make lists and I put them up on my mirrors, on my walls. Multiple lists. I'm a total list maker because I think that if you don't write down your goals, then you're actually not going to visualize them, and then you're not going to meet them.
As a musician, the goals sort of are they surrounding, like, hey, I want to play bigger tour, I want to play, you know, the summer festivals, or is it more like I want to, you know, do this many new songs, I want to get in the studio this many times, that kind of thing?
They're usually pretty specific goals. Usually it'll be something, you know, I want to have an album out by this date and I want to submit for this specific tour that I know is going to be happening, or I want to go to Australia, something like that. Mm-hmm. It's usually a pretty specific goal.
Well, let's talk about your music. You know, you had such a great year in 2015, a critically acclaimed record, Sprinter. You know, when you got into music, it's interesting because your first love wasn't guitar. You were actually into piano, right?
Yeah, I did start on piano. I wouldn't say that I loved it, but I played it.
Talk about your relationship with the guitar, because it's a big part of your music now. And the reason I ask is because it wasn't your first instrument.
Yeah, I picked up the guitar in high school. And when I did that, it was solely a vehicle for the lyrics that I was singing, that I was writing. But for me, the guitar has actually evolved into something just as exciting to me as writing lyrics and getting to sing them. It's like an entirely new voice, apart from my own singing voice, that I get to control as well. It's a melody maker.
Yeah.
It's about melody, and it gives me the opportunity to sing one melody and play another at the same time.
Yeah, and it's funny because for the WGN radio listener out there that may not be familiar with your work, you know, you mentioned high school, and maybe they think, oh, that was so long ago. But for you, I mean, I think you're under 25 years old, right? You're like right around that age, but you're still learning that instrument. How much are you learning, or what are the new things that you're finding out about playing guitar as you move forward in your career?
I like to try and think of it as learning. I honestly get pretty discouraged with actually my limits on the guitar. I find it to be an incredibly frustrating instrument only because I'm not as good as I want to be. So believe it or not, that's actually a struggle that I really have. But that being said, I make it work for myself. I work within the parameters of my own abilities, which are honestly quite limited on the guitar. because my fingers just don't move that quickly. And I write, I guess, parts on the guitar that are going to best serve what I'm doing live. I write parts that I can play.
Yeah, but as a musician, I mean, for you constantly being on tour, I mean, you're obviously proficient. And you know, for you to say that you're limited in your skills, it doesn't show up in your music. I mean, that's one of the great things about it. I mean, when you listen to it, is that it is, the guitar is a big part of what you do. So, you know, how do you expand the limits? I mean, is it just through playing, or are you experimenting with learning more about the instrument? How do you approach the craft when you're constantly playing?
Well, one thing I really like to do is get different pedals to play through, because it changes the way, I mean, it changes the tone. And when you change the tone of the instrument, then all of a sudden you get different ideas for how to change what you're playing to better suit that tone. Mm-hmm. So what I like to do is I like to just experiment with pedals that I'm playing through, and it changes the way that I'm hearing the instrument. And then it kind of forces me each time I do that to not do the natural thing that my fingers are inclined to do on the fretboard. It makes me, I like to keep things weird, I guess. I like to keep things weird so that I don't get too conditioned to a certain way of playing. I think if you keep what you're doing a mystery to yourself, then you're going to constantly be trying to find new ways to use the instrument.
You know, for you, it seems like it might be a benefit to the fact that you were self-taught.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I've taken years and years of music theory, you name it, anything that is, you know, out of a book, anything that is traditional, I've learned it all. I took college classes. I took those kinds of classes in high school. Extracurricular classes. I mean, I did all of that. I did the theory, and I don't remember any of it. I don't.
That's
so
yeah.
Being self-taught is something, it's something that I can rely on. I can rely on myself to write and to play what it is that I want to write and play.
We're talking with Taurus, who is playing at Lincoln Hall as part of the Tomorrow Never Knows Music Festival, which will be the 15th. You know, we talked so much about the instrumentation and the guitar, but the strength and the focal point of your music is definitely your lyrics. It talks a lot about your religious upbringing in Georgia. Talk about the idea of putting your whole life out there for everybody. That exercise of being very personal and putting all of your, you know, your personal life in the listener's ears.
I only share with the world what I want to share. I only put into the songs what I want to put into the songs. So, you know, what I'm offering in the art is what I'm willing to share and what I'm willing to discuss and what I'm willing to have people in on. Of course, there are things people don't know about me.
I guess it's a testament to your music, because the assumption is because it feels so personal. It feels like, wow, you're really exposing yourself, or you're putting yourself out there. You're really being truthful with your music, more so than other artists who might say, you know, I'm just gunning for the number one spot, or the lyrics that are a little bit more shallow. I mean, how do you do that? How do you, you know, choose one thing and maybe not choose the other?
I guess usually I make that decision after considering what I think is going to be important for listeners to connect with. So, in a sense, I do consider the way that people will be hearing the music. I consider the way that they will be perceiving it. And I consider the way that they'll be trying to find themselves within these stories. And if there's something that is personal that I feel like is a universally relatable, or not even entirely universally, but relatable in some capacity lyric, I'll put it in there for the sake of connection. But if there's something that's uber personal that I just think has nothing to do with, or rather is not something that I could see people connecting with, then I probably am not going to put it in song.
Have you been in a situation with your music where you've put lyrics out there that you're like, well, that's something that I want to put out that's private, or that I'm going to put out for, like you just said, you've waited against whether it relates and then later pulled it back?
I've almost done that, but I've restrained from doing that, because I do think that once I've written something, if there is something that I feel slightly afraid to share, usually it means that it's the most important thing for me to keep it in the song. That's usually the bit that's going to, I guess, be the relatable bit.
Yeah.
is the part that scares me. So yeah, I've been tempted to do that, but I haven't done that yet.
Well, Torres is coming to the Lincoln Hall on the 15th to play the Tomorrow Never Knows Music Festival, which will have shows at Lincoln Hall, at Chuba's, at the Hideout. Torres, thank you so much for taking some time out of the tour to talk to us, and good luck with the show.
Oh, thank you so much. It was lovely talking to you.
Well, that's going to do it here for the download tonight. Patty Vasquez coming up.